You're listening to Clouser on Business. Thanks for coming back. I'm Clouser, your host. Thanks for being with us. Got Heidi Bird back in the studio with me today. Welcome back, Heidi.
Thanks, Clouser. How are you?
I'm doing well, thank you. Hey, so, you know, we've been talking about leadership and workplace culture and millennials and retaining employees and all that kind of stuff.
And chickens.
Yeah, and chickens. I wonder whatever happened to those chickens. Hey, so part of our discussion has been workplace culture, and I just wanted to ask you, you work in a different environment than I do. What are you seeing out there?
So I'm seeing a lot of less about the free meals and ping pong tables at work and more sort of about leadership and who you're reporting to and the people and the team around you all across the country. And, you know, people have different offices everywhere. And so how do you kind of build a culture across the world or the country when you have different offices and places? And so it's more about the people and relationships than it is about the free stuff.
Yeah, understand. Hey, so you may recall that we had a podcast on what successful people do in the morning. And we used an article by a gentleman by the name of William Vanderblumen titled How Successful People Start Their Day.
Yep.
And we found that out on Forbes.com. Vanderblumen's written many articles on leadership and workplace culture, and I had the opportunity to talk to William via the phone the other day regarding how to build successful workplace culture in a variety of organizations. Here's the interview, and Heidi and I will catch you on the other side.
Sounds good.
Hey, well, I'm really pleased to have William Vanderblumen on our podcast today. Welcome to the podcast, William.
Oh, thanks for having me, man. This is a great fun.
And well, yeah, thanks for taking, I know you're a busy man, thanks for taking the time. Hey, can you share with our listeners a little bit about your background and how you came to doing what you're doing now as a career and living?
Yeah, sure. I as far back as I can remember, I've had a job. I've always enjoyed working and building something, even back to the days when I was in third or fourth grade and had a paper route and built the route out and expanded it. I've just loved seeing something grow. Went to college thinking I would do a business degree and, you know, take over the Western Hemisphere or something like that. And got sidetracked along the way, had a real spiritual awakening, and went into ministry and pastored for about 15 years, primarily as a senior pastor of churches of all sizes. But the last one I served was probably about 5,000 adults and a couple thousand kids, so pretty good-sized church. In Texas, we learned to use the word big conservatively, so I won't say it was big, but it was pretty good-sized. Left ministry. I went through a divorce, which I would not recommend, but ended up leaving the church just wasn't in any shape to preach, and went into the business world. And while I was in the business world, working for a large company, Fortune 200 oil and gas company, great people, saw them go through a CEO succession. And, you know, the average lifespan of a Fortune 500 CEO, if you look at how long they last in terms of tenure, most people tell you somewhere between 3, maybe 5 years, but it's pretty short run before you move to something else. And they were coming off 17 years of one CEO. And they did the transition in, 90, 120 days, something like that. And that CEO is still there 9 years later. So they've beaten all the statistics. And then I looked at that 90 to 120 day succession that they did. And I thought back to when I went to the last church I served. It took them almost 3 years to find me. And that just shows scarcity of talent, I guess. And then, on the backside, when I left, it took them about 2.5 years to find the guy that came after me. And I was only there 6 years. So they went through 11 years where you had 6 years with a pastor and 5 without. And I just wondered, you know, why in the world can't the church have a solution as good as what the business world has? So set out to try and build a solution to help churches and faith-based companies find their top-tier staff in a way that would be as good as any corporate solution they might find.
Mm-hmm. And so just interesting. So, you know, how do you go about doing that? And how do these churches and faith-based organizations find you?
Well, it's easy. They just type Vanderblumen because it's so easy to spell.
Yeah, it's one of those names. I thought maybe you should be from Grand Rapids. I'm not sure, but
exactly. It's the only place I can make a dinner reservation and not have to spell my name. We looked. Yeah, it's a funny story. We looked everywhere. I probably bought 300 domain names. I thought, you know, let's name it anything except after me. And we hired an SEO consultant, you know, like a search engine optimization, and mm-hmm. he looked at all our domain names, and he said, well, I've got the answer, but you're not going to like it. And I said, what's that? And he said, well, your last name is so messed up that it actually works. You can misspell it 100 different ways, and it'll still Google back to you. So long answer from a recovering preacher to a short question. Most people just find us through a web search. Mm-hmm. I do a lot of writing for Forbes and Fortune and Inc. and Fast Company and those sorts of things. And so sometimes people find us there or through our podcast, but more often than not, it's through some content we produce that drives people to our website. And then they end up calling us and saying, can you help me, please? Next to no cold calling.
I see. Well, that's and that's how I found you. Just as a reminder to our listeners, or maybe for those listening in that didn't hear a previous podcast, but I used one of your articles that you had posted on Forbes regarding what successful people do in the morning, maybe different than non-successful or not as successful people. And so, but I really appreciate all the postings, and you do have quite a few out there for those listening that, especially on Forbes, on a variety of articles. And I wanted to ask you, you've written a lot of articles on building company work culture. Why do you think this is such a critical topic in today's business world?
Well, I think it's probably always been critical, but it's maybe more urgent now than in the past because the workforce is changing. The number of baby boomers that are retiring, everybody talks about this all the time. What I don't think people notice is how few in the workforce are my age. I'm mid-40s. So there's like a HR people call it a double hump camel. You've got a huge number of baby boomers and then a trough of people in the, say, 35 to 55 age range, and then a huge number of millennials. And these millennials within 10 years are going to be the vast majority of our workforce. Mm-hmm. And those folks, in my view, tend to not just change jobs, but change careers, like in record numbers. They leave not just from one type of coffee company to another, but from a coffee company to pizza to hospital to, weird zigzags. And mm-hmm. retention is maybe one of the biggest challenges to employers right now. I think the millennial generation, more than anybody, wants to enjoy the place that they work. And, they wait longer to get married, so they're probably coming into work as a single person. They probably are farther away from their family than previous generations geographically. Mm-hmm. And so they're looking for the millennials in our office call it family, like friends and family in the workplace. Yeah. And if your culture is really good, I think you've got a better chance of keeping top talent around for a longer period of time.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, and that's something I want to get to you in a little bit as far as companies keeping and engaging, these different age groups, millennials into their workplace and keeping them as long-term employees. But, and I think a lot of it goes to, how that company culture is. And you've written an article, I think it's called The Four Keys of a Remarkable Company Culture. Can you speak to that a little bit?
Well, there's so many, articles out there about culture. I think what I've found more than anything is that you just define the culture, know what it is. And culture, you can look at a whole lot of different measuring sticks or definitions for culture. But the definition that I've found through actually a Texas A&M dissertation, and if any of your listeners are from Texas and know Texas A&M, They know that it is the biggest cult on the planet. I have two kids that have gone there, and they come back with all these crazy phrases and sayings and hand signs and all that, and they all know it, and nobody else does. But culture is a set of behaviors and customs that are performed without even thinking about it. And so a company has a culture, but very few people take time to actually define what that is. And it's not what you want to become. It's a little bit of that, but it's what you are when you're at your very best. So mm-hmm. I think if teams will say, hey, when we're functioning at our very best, what makes us different? What are the symbols? What are the customs? What are the things we do without thinking about it when we're at our best that make us our very best? And mm-hmm. if folks will start to define those, then they'll have a clearer way of hiring, a clearer way of measuring performance, a clearer way of telling people that maybe they aren't a fit. Mm-hmm. But without a clear definition, that's hard to do.
Yeah, and the first step, like you're saying, is to define it. But then, how do you explain that, and how do you what are the things that you do to get the employees engaged in after you've defined it and explained it?
Right. Well, I'm learning this as I go. I know in our company, what worked for us, and I have a lot of millennials in our company, probably 68% of our workforce is under 35. In our company, we crowdsourced those values. In other words, we, as a whole group, just had blue sky thinking, a bunch of white paper on the wall to write down ideas, and we asked that question. When we're functioning at our best, what do we do that makes us unique? And what do we do that enables us to do our best job? And mm-hmm. and we probably threw 100 ideas on the wall. And, no bad ideas, just talk. Oh, then we let it sit for 3 or 4 months. We came back to it, and I don't know if you have to wait that long, but we waited for a while. Mm-hmm. And we said as a group together, all right, here's what we said. Do they fall into common buckets? And they did. And they happened to fall into about 9 buckets for us. And 9's not a magic number. Some companies have 4 cultural values or 10. I think, you get too many and you have a problem. But it was 9. And then, and only then, did I as the leader go away and try and distill those into repeatable phrases. And then I came back with those repeatable phrases and asked folks what they thought, and we tweaked them a little bit. So it's very different from sort of traditional strategic planning where the CEO goes off to the mountain and comes down with 2 stone tablets and here's what we're going to do.
Right.
So, if you try and do it that way, it won't work because, frankly, the CEO probably knows less about the culture of what's really going on in their company than anybody in the company.
So Well, I think they're the ones that are blinded to it probably, most of all.
That's right. I think you're exactly right.
Yeah, they think that they're doing this or presenting this, but in actuality, a lot of times it's they're the biggest roadblock to it. So, hey, so I was out of curiosity on that process. Is this something after you met with your people and you came up with the 9 buckets? Did you have a someone helping you or a firm helping you work through this for yourself, or just did it all in inside your own company?
We did it all in-house, and there are good companies out there that do this sort of thing. I've worked with a few of them, so I know a little bit about how to guide that process. But for us, it was who are we? What is our DNA? And it may take a fresh set of eyes. And I will say, we're a pretty young company, and we were really young. We were probably a year and a half old when we did this exercise, so it's pretty fresh. If you're in an mm-hmm. older company that's been around a long time, it might help to have sort of a tour guide or a Sherpa to help you through the process, but we did it all in-house.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's great. Hey, so you get called in to into the organization to come in and help them find the talent, whatever level that is. How do you get engaged with that organization? When you go in there, how do you assess where this church is at or organization's at?
Yeah, well, I think the key to any addition to a team that's successful, whether you're using a search firm or doing it on your own, is viewing the search as an organ transplant. And it's a metaphor I've used a ton, but bear with me for just a minute. Mm-hmm. If you think of a heart transplant, first of all, you're going to use outside help because you're not going to do the operation on yourself. But but really there are two functions of a transplant doctor or medical practice. One is develop a donor list, and, you know, that's find suitable candidates that might work. But secondly, and if you talk to transplant docs, they'll probably tell you the real art of transplant is not finding a donor list. It's making sure there's a tissue match. Mm-hmm. And as one of my friends said to me, William, you can put a healthy heart into a healthy body, and if it doesn't match, everybody dies.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, whether you're using a search firm or on your own, I think knowing your organization, knowing your DNA is essential to beginning and ending the process of adding anybody new to the team. So when we go in, that's really what we're studying. We've got a process we walk through that helps us learn the DNA of the client in a way that we're not bringing a stranger to them, but probably something that feels like long-lost family.
Yeah, it's good because in your I wanted to come back around to this idea because you've written another article that I've seen, the five reasons why you should have a collaborative hiring process. And I'm assuming I don't have it in front of me, but as I recall, though, it's you know, how you go about hiring someone and all the things that you discover during that hiring process probably leads to what you're talking about here is finding that right tissue match.
Absolutely. And one of the keys to having a good sort of collaborative hiring process is knowing your culture. You know, if you go to that article, you'll see a lot of the hiring that happens in a 360 hire, or where you're using people up and down the org chart to assess a new employee, is do they fit the culture or not? Not do I want to work for them, but are they going to fit in here? And so, again, back to knowing your culture, knowing your DNA leads to a better hiring process, whether you're using collaborative or just yourself.
Yeah. Well, and I think is equally as important, too, is if I'm on the staff and I'm going to remain on the staff, am I going to fit the person we're trying to hire? I mean, you know, life's a two-way street. So, you know, we're looking for someone that fits our culture, but that same person is looking for a culture that, you know, they'd feel comfortable working in as well.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So when you work with these organizations, then when you go in there, let's just say take a church or whoever, who do you go in there and try to work with your assessment processes, and who ends up being the team that you work with to help them with finding the right people for their staff?
You know, it's different for anybody. I mean, every single search is unique. I tell new people on our team, if you've seen one church, you've seen about one church.
Mm-hmm.
That's it. There is no blanket policy. So, you know, when I'm going in working with a team, I generally try and figure out who are the key stakeholders, but it might be completely different from one church to the next. So it's we really avoid cookie cutters and sort of punch lists of things to do, and try and figure out, you know, who's going to be essential to this hire. You know, who are the superiors, who works alongside them, who works for them, try and get a sense from them, whatever's going to help us understand the DNA. And it can really vary just depending on the nuances of the organization.
Mm-hmm. Hey, a follow-up question to your example of the, you know, you can have the right heart, but if the tissue doesn't match up, so when you're hiring practices, you know, during a heart or organ transplant, it's always seems like it's an expedited or a quick, hey, we've got a donor that has whatever organ, and, you know, we got to get you in, and we've got the organ coming up, you know, on a life flight helicopter. What processes do you use to be able to determine if this person that you have that you think is going to fit this organization, what kind of processes do you go through there to make that happen as quickly so you don't miss out on some top talent that you might be dealing with?
Well, I think hiring and quickly are two words that should never go together.
Yeah, so, exactly. That's the old adage, isn't it?
Yes. You know, the single worst mistake companies make, and churches are no different, is they hire too quickly and they fire too slowly.
Mm-hmm.
And so I just, no matter how talented somebody is, I don't ever worry about, oh, we might miss out on somebody if we don't rush. Because if they're right, they're going to be around for a while. It's kind of like dating or getting engaged. You don't rush to get engaged because you might miss out on something. If they're the right one, they'll still be around in a little while. So
you pretty much know that, don't you? Kind of.
Yeah. My standard advice is go a little slower than you think you need to, and take your time and measure twice and cut once. So and when you're measuring, it's looking at their DNA. How do they function when they're not in the spotlight? What do they do, when they're, quote, off duty? And does the way they behave when they're off duty match with the culture that you've built in your organization?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, for sure. So one of the I've been a, I've known the Lord for a long time, and I've, served within churches on anytime you're a CPA, they want to get you on the board of the accounting side of things and whatever, but I'm just curious, just for my own, so you find a hire for this church and the staff likes everything, where does the congregation fit in to
sure.
is that your final judge on if you've made a good decision or not?
It totally depends. Some hires that the church may need may not be very popular, but they're needed. I don't know many popular bookkeepers at the church, but usually they have to tell people no, you can't do that. But it just varies, man. And I hate to sound like a broken record, but I just came back from working with a Catholic church recently, and that's pretty top down. You don't go to a congregation for a vote on that. And we've got clients in New England that are congregational churches where every vote matters and it's pure democracy. So it really boils down to understanding the nuance of each client and then not trying to tell them what to do as much as coming alongside them and offering them advice that fits their particular culture and situation.
Yeah, that's a good insight. Hey, another question I have for you on a related topic, we had talked about it before as far as culture and the millennials, for example, moving from job to job. So what processes, and I know that's a little bit about their culture, but it's also a little bit probably about the workplace not doing certain things. What's a good way for companies to, the practices a company could use to retain the good employees that they want to keep on staff?
Well, pay them fairly. A lot of people assume that people will come work for them because their company is so cool. And most CEOs think their company is cool, but not everybody is going to take a pay cut to come work someplace. So make sure you're paying them fairly. Now, having said that, I don't think you can buy retention. In fact, many times I see people who overpay people and then wish they could get rid of them and can't because the people don't have anywhere they can go. So,
yeah, right.
I don't create golden handcuffs unless you're willing to be handcuffed to the person for life. But pay them fairly and then think about non-monetary ways to reward your people. Most of the cultural events that we do, we actually have a culture calendar. So once a month there is a scheduled culture event. And most of them don't cost very much money. We've gone to these larger cities, have these things called escape rooms, where you go in and they lock you in a room and you try and figure out as a team how to get out. You race against the clock, and it's a giant puzzle. Oh, we did that one time, and that highlighted our values of solution side living. It built the team, and it didn't cost a lot of money. So having events that build culture, having a workplace that builds culture. We have a lot of open seating in our office so people can move around during the day. This millennial generation is not just the first online generation. They're the first laptop generation. They really have never in their life been tethered to a desk. So, creating a workplace that people want to be at, creating a culture where people want to, go hang out and have their family, those are kind of the keys in my mind to making sure people stick around. And also, building a leadership pipeline, knowing that people won't stick around. Everyone is an interim hire. Nobody's going to be with you for life.
Mm-hmm. So So do you have, William, do you have the ping pong table with the workout balls around it as the as the chair?
No.
I only say that because I was working with a company one time up here in the Northwest, and one of our clients was, and this is no offense to the client, it's just it speaks exactly to what you're talking about, is their conference room was the ping pong table, and I sat on a big workout ball as we discussed, the business topic. I'd have to say, though, I was just as effective as maybe more effective sitting on my back was in a better position, I think, maybe sitting on that exercise ball. But but speaking about what you're doing there, I did see you did something with pumpkins or something, didn't you? Or I seen something.
Yeah. We, for Halloween, we carved logos of our clients into pumpkins and then put it out on social media, and the clients love it and they push it out everywhere. So it's another inexpensive way. It cost me about $12 to do that thing, and everybody loved it, and it also created some goodwill on social media.
Yeah. Hey, so in closing here, we're running a little bit out of time, but one final question for you. What would success look like to you in terms of a company culture? I mean, if you knew that even for your own company that you've done well, what are one or two signs of success there?
I think that people are inviting their friends to come interview at their company. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's like any sort of, how do you know if your product's any good? If the ultimate test of customer satisfaction is, would you refer this to a friend? And I'd say it's the same with employees. If employees are inviting their friends to come interview or work at your place, then that's a really good sign that your culture's good.
Mm-hmm. Well, hey, William, I really appreciate you coming on today and taking time to talk to us about this. And if people hear you speaking today and they want to learn more about you, or maybe a church organization wants to reach out to you, to help them find, the proper staff, where do they find you and how do they get a hold of you?
Yeah, I was literally just try and type Vanderblumen into your Google search bar, and you'll get there no matter how you spell it. And hopefully there'll be some good free resources for people to read and help them as they try and build and run and keep a team.
Yeah, and the name of your company is actually Vanderblumen SG, is it not? Is that how?
Vanderblumen Search Group.
Yep. Yeah, Search Group, yeah. And you're down in the big state of Texas. Everything's going well down there, I think.
Oh, yeah. We love being here. It's a great state. Best country on earth.
Okay. Hey, thanks again, William. I really appreciate your time.
Thank you. Appreciate having me on.
Okay, you bet. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Hey, well, thanks to William Vanderblumen for taking the time out of his busy schedule to talk with us. I hope that that conversation was interesting and useful to you. There was a lot of great insights there. What did you take away from there, Heidi?
I took away a bunch of things. I think for me, the main thing is making sure that if you're part of the hiring process or part of a group of team members who are hiring, that necessarily, even though you may be struggling with getting team members on board right away, making sure you have the right team members is the most important thing. So taking the time to make sure that you vet the people who are coming on board in a proper way, even if it takes a little bit longer in the hiring process. I know it can be frustrating when you're strapped for team members and you need people to come on board right away. But making sure you have the right employees is always so much better. Mm-hmm. If you get the right hires, to me, just as he was saying, then the business flow, the culture works better. You don't have to worry then about the back end, what that looks like, which is maybe not getting the right person and having to fire them down the road. It just, taking the time up front, I think, and valuing your time in the process as well as their time, I think makes for a better hiring process.
Yeah, I agree with you there. And we were referring to an old business adage that, you should hire slowly and fire quickly. And that's not, don't want to be disrespectful or anything to employees, but what I've experienced in my career is everyone's been too rushed to get a position filled, and sometimes when you take that extra amount of time, you might just get that person that fits you better, more so than you might think. I think the other thing too that I took away from was ownership or management needs to define what they want their workplace culture to be. Because it may not even be close to where they're at right now. So whether it's in this application or a lot of applications, just us as people, we have thoughts and ideas inside ourselves, but a lot of us have trouble getting those out on a piece of paper and being able to explain those to our workforce and to others, that customers or vendors that we might come in contact. What do you think about that?
Yeah, I totally agree. And no matter what stage of your career you're at, living up to your own standards or higher standards, even if you're not the CEO of the company, I present myself every way, every day in my company as if I do own the company. Mm-hmm. And I think that part of that is driven by, the CEO saying, hey, we're all owners here. So if you've got a culture that kind of says, okay, everyone takes ownership for whatever piece of the clients or whatever you feel that you need to take ownership of, go ahead and do so, because it just makes you look better, makes your clients look better. Everybody wins.
Yeah. Well, I thought William had a lot of great insights there, and he's in the business of helping other people find people and helping them build their own culture. So really, really thankful again to William for taking the time to talk to us. Well, hey, for those of you who are interested in the topic of building a successful, meaningful workplace culture, or shifting even the culture that you have now, you can see a variety of William's articles on Forbes and Fortune.com. And you can learn more about William on our website at clauseronbusiness.com on the guest page. We'll have a photo of William and his biography there. But anyway, for more interviews and conversations, catch us on iTunes, Stitcher, Podbean, and as always, clauseronbusiness.com. Well, all for now. You've been listening to Clauser on Business.